Blog Talk Radio.
It's no accident. You're listening to the One Cell, One Light Radio Network, featuring Dr. Hildegard Steniger. Join Dr. Hildy as she and her guests discuss a blend of art, science, and medicine, all coming up on the Dr. Hildy Show. And it all starts right now. Here's Dr. Hildy.
Welcome to the show, audience. I have a returning guest with me, Ms. Rosalind Peterson. And Rosalind, over the years, has been very active in pesticide awareness and other environmental factors in saving animals and other trees, whatever it may be, from the consequence of some environmental stress factor doing damage to these special niche areas. And in today's show, Rosalind is bringing to our attention the risk of 11 million sea mammals that are at risk from exposure to these ultrasound and sonic bursts that are happening in our Pacific oceans and in other areas of the world. Welcome, Rosalind, to the show again and many times in the future. I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you, too, and thank you very much for having me as a guest today on your show.
Now, with what's going on, could you give an overview for our audience to know what they should be, what is happening out there in reference to what we're talking about, the sonar testing, and that with not just our military, but also in other industrial areas that have happened even with Madagascar?
Well, here's what's going on. Back mm-hmm. under the Bush administration, going back to about 2005, the U.S. Navy, under the Bush administration, decided to begin to expand its warfare exercises in the Atlantic, the Pacific, and the Gulf of Mexico. And during the course of a time period up to 2007, the Navy made the decision that they would have a number of warfare ranges where they could practice Navy military practice for war using live fire exercises, sonar, all kinds of different warfare testing, weapons of mass destruction in one sense. So what happened was, starting individually with the small ranges, they started to build these small ranges. Some of them had been in operation for years, but not on any great scale. And so they decided to start these warfare ranges, each one with an individual Navy environmental impact statement, and each one to be granted a permit by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to harm marine mammals within those ranges. This includes fish. This includes biologically sensitive areas, breeding grounds, feeding habitat, etc. And they started implementing these ranges between 2007 and 2008, and then every year there would be more ranges and more expansions and more impacts on marine mammals. Now, according to Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Barbara Boxer, and Congressman, U.S. Congressman Henry Waxman, there's a quote here I'm going to read for your audience, which kind of spells out what it is that the Navy is doing. And here's the quote. The Navy plans to increase the number of its exercises or expand the areas in which they may occur, and virtually every coastal state will be affected. Some exercises may occur in the nation's most biologically sensitive marine habitats, including national marine sanctuaries and breeding habitats. In all, the Navy anticipates that more than 2.3 million takes, significant disruptions in marine mammal foraging, breeding, and other essential behaviors per year, or 11.7 million takes over the course of a five-year permit. And this letter was sent by them to Dr. Jane Lubchenco, head of NOAA at the time, on June 19, 2009. Now, let me explain what a take is. It's defined under the Marine Mammal Protection Act as harass, hunt, capture, kill, or collect, or attempt to engage in any such activity. And it's defined under the Endangered Species Act as to harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, wound, kill, trap, capture, or collect, or attempt to engage in any such conduct. Now, the Navy needed permits from NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, in order to harm marine mammals. Now, this is something that the Navy and NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, worked as cooperating agencies. So when the Navy said we wanted to harm so many marine mammals, then pretty soon down the pike comes a rubber stamp from NOAA saying that that's fine, you can take these marine mammals in these ranges. Well, in the beginning, it didn't look like much until it was added up that in 2009 they estimated that there would be harm to 11.7 million marine mammals from all of their 12 warfare operating exercise ranges. Now what the Navy has done since that time is these ranges have been in operation, and these are ranges along the Atlantic seaboard, the Gulf of Mexico, the islands of the Marianas near Guam in the Pacific, the Hawaiian Islands, Alaska, and from Southern California all the way up to the state of Washington. There are various small ranges that have been put into place. The number and scope of the harm to marine mammals has been underestimated by the Navy for a long time, or underreported, because by the time that anyone finds the strandings or finds dead animals, dead marine mammals, or other types of fish and marine life that isn't under the category of marine mammal, it's very hard to determine what caused their demise. And so, therefore, the Navy has been skating by, even when many of the strandings and many of the deaths that one sees occurring around the coastal regions and in the island areas have been found, and that they haven't been able to tie the Navy's warfare testing to these deaths. And it becomes difficult because of the amount of time that these animals are in the ocean before they wash ashore, or that some marine mammals may strand themselves due to the noise from sonar activity.
Right. They get disoriented and everything that way. Now, with each one of the marine animals, which are the large mammal ones, are we seeing more of the dolphins, porpoises, versus more of the whales being stranded?
It's hard to know because of the type of activities that the Navy is being conducted, but overall we're seeing more marine mammal decline. We're seeing more ocean, in other words, ocean wildlife of marine life of all types, beginning to suffer the impacts from various activities, not only the Navy, but other activities as well.
Right.
And what I want to describe here for you
mm-hmm.
is shock and awe. Now, we've always, you know, when we saw the Iraq War under the Bush administration and our bombs were going off in Iraq and they were showing these shock and awe pictures, it was all over the news about our bombing mission and raids into Iraq, we were using Hellfire missiles, all kinds of missiles, all kinds of bombs, all kinds of things we were dropping at that time. These are weapons of mass destruction. Well, the United States Navy has implemented this type of live fire training in our oceans, in all the ranges, and they're duplicating a lot of this activity. So you're having missile exercises, bomb exercises, and these are 10,000-pound bombs, 5,000-pound bombs, 250-pound bombs. There's all kinds of gunnery exercises. there's a mass of things that they are doing, thinking exercises, mind warfare training, anti-submarine warfare tracking, their sonar activity, different levels of sonar and more sophisticated sonar as we advance with technology. There's also lasers that are being used that cook everything in their path once they're pointed toward the ocean. There's all kinds of experimental weapon systems, rail guns, electromagnetic rail guns being tested, highly polluting, very noisy. There's aircraft noise, ship noise. There's all kinds of disruptions that are taking place in our oceans while the Navy practices. The Navy has refused to stop or curtail any of its activities to protect any marine reserves, to protect any national marine sanctuary areas, to stop when the whales are migrating along either the eastern seaboard or along the California, Oregon, Washington coastline. They have decided that they have the right to practice everywhere at any time, and they can blow up our oceans, drop toxic chemicals in our oceans, dispose of weapons ordnance in the oceans. The range of things that the Navy is doing is absolutely staggering.
Right, and it keeps growing, and it's not just in, like if it's sonar or anything, in a sonar blast where they send air, you know, compressed high-pressure air over the ocean or through the ocean, it also hits the ocean bottom in some areas and thus destroys that plant life or that animal life for food that also interrupts with the natural food chain of the ocean sea animals.
Now, yes, it can. And also the lasers and the sonar, much marine life tends to move away from the loud noise and the sound because we're beginning to see that some marine mammals are coming up deaf. They can't hear. And when they can't hear, they can't communicate, they can't find their way, they have no ability to locate food because it can destroy their hearing. So they're finding that deafness is a problem among dolphins and some porpoises. So we're looking at a wide range of activities that have varying impacts.
Now, with one is they're large ocean masses, but we're also seeing this activity too in the Mediterranean, which happened around Madagascar, which was in reference to companies that are associated with oil using sonar and different types of technology to look for oil in the ocean bottom too, correct?
That's correct. And we have NOAA issuing permits to oil companies, any company that wants to harm marine mammals has to get a permit from NOAA. So you don't just have the Navy, you have the Air Force, other branches of the military. You have their ranges where they're conducting experiments over ocean areas. And you have anyone engaged in oil and gas production, any type of coastal building that's going on. The whole range of types of permits that people are getting to take marine mammals in various locations probably by now outnumber the number of the marine mammals of a particular species because NOAA refuses to add them all up to find out if they're granting so many permits that it far exceeds the number of marine mammals that are alive in any particular area or are alive as a total population.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so what's changing and what's getting interesting is that the U.S. Navy not only now has all of these smaller ranges, the Navy has decided that they want to practice everywhere. So on the Atlantic seaboard, the Navy has drawn a new map where it encompasses all of the smaller ranges and heads out into international waters to perform their testing. And they have made the area, which goes from Newfoundland, the Canadian border, all the way down the entire eastern seaboard, all the way around Florida, through the Gulf of Mexico, and borders Cuba, and all of and the Bahamas,
mm-hmm.
and all of these ranges now are under one umbrella, one big, large range. And if you want an example of an eastern seaboard problem, just one, we've got an area where the Navy is going to be, it's bridges Florida and Georgia, but they're going to be building a submarine warfare testing underground area. And they're building it smack dab in the area where the right whales, of which there's only between 350 and 400 on the Atlantic seaboard, have their calves. It's the breeding ground.
Right. Specialized for all the time going there.
All the time going there. And so what happens is that they know that the sonar and the blast and the pounding and all the activity and then the warfare training that's going to go on in this range, the Navy has refused, even during the times when the right whales are calving, to stop the activity. Therefore, the right whales that go into that area to have their calves may not survive, or they may not be able to find a safe place to have their calves, because other activities are going on up and down the entire coast. So we're looking at the extinction of a species by the Navy, totally in the name of war practice, for live warfare practice.
And isn't this really relevant, meaning what we're seeing throughout the world in every aspect of some type of pollution or some type of testing, whether it's on the air, the land, or the sea, it's basically taking a toll of that species, meaning it's just like you said, they're becoming extinct and annihilated that way.
Yes, or harmed to the point where they can't reproduce, they can't breed, there's no place for them to forage because the Navy has taken a bomb and blown up their food supply. For example, the U.S. Air Force has decided to drop some bombing exercises and conduct sonar exercises in the home of the manatees in Florida. Now, there's no reason for the Navy to be doing this because a lot of their testing and their bombing and all this, they know what these bombs are going to do.
Right.
So they've decided to pick this area, which is so sensitive, one of the only areas in which manatees live, and they've decided that that's where they want to bomb. And NOAA, the National Marine Fisheries Service branch of NOAA, has decided, well, we'll just keep issuing these permits. It's okay. Because the Navy says, well, you know, our exercises, you know, may, but they may not harm anything. But we've all seen the results of a bomb blowing up in Iraq or these different places. We've already seen the impacts of these heavy-duty weapon systems being used for years. And to say that we're going to explode them in the ocean and they're going to have no effect on anything?
Right, and they do have an effect, meaning we can just look at what a sound or a crash can do just on the street and the effects of it, let alone a bomb, where in the water that sound wave travels and can cause other loss of hearing to species,
mm-hmm.
not micron, but meaning a smaller species or anything like that, it's playing a giant toll. What I find interesting is that not only are we seeing the relationship with humans and the loss of life that way, you know, in aerial emissions and increase of diseases, but also of species that are very old to this planet. Like you mentioned, the manatee, the whales. Whales live for, 100 years, 89 years a long time.
Yes, and they have to grow fairly large to breed.
Correct.
So any time you disrupt a species where you're disrupting the calving and you're disrupting their ability to breed or feed, those marine mammals aren't going to grow large enough to reproduce because you keep harming them as they migrate through all of these activities that are ongoing along these huge areas where the Navy practices.
Right, and in this, I know we're seeing the effects of the animals, but are you seeing also the death of plant life? Not just like, I'll give you an example, like certain whales eat krill, which are, you know, the little organism that lives like a little baby shrimp in the ocean, versus are we also seeing death of the plants in that area that the testing has occurred? I haven't kept up on that aspect, Rosalind, so...
Well, it's hard now to get into those areas to conduct research because the Navy in many areas is practicing these activities and they don't want
right.
the public in
they're
those
secure.
Areas.
Yeah, they're secure. It's under testing, so no one can come in.
Right. And the other impact is that the scope is so broad in having them in the Atlantic and the Pacific and the Gulf of Mexico and in so many areas. In so many ranges, it's hard to know, in other words, what kind of exercises they're conducting, and also the scope of the exercises and its impact on the marine life there, because they're not going to stop testing long enough for researchers to really get in and make a determination. With krill and the smaller, you know, the larger eat the smaller in any kind of society in the ocean. And what happens is with overfishing in some areas, but also with the idea that when you start to disrupt even the ability for killer whales, for example, to round up their food so that they can eat, they work together as a family, and they'll circle their prey. And then once they've got it circled, it looks like a corral, you know, a horse corral, essentially.
Right.
And then they're eating massive amounts of food at that time. Well, if you disrupt where the food supply is, and you also disrupt them with sonar, they may not be able to find and gather enough food as a group to survive.
Right. They don't have enough of their posse to corral the food. And at the same time, the food may be disoriented after a blast.
Well, that's correct. And you see bomb blasts or lasers like they're using now and these high-powered weapon systems that they're testing have the potential to destroy feeding and breeding grounds, especially feeding grounds, where these animals would group together to feed or find a food source. And so if you have, you know, it's like... I can describe it this way. It's like you and I going to the grocery store, and someone is blowing up the grocery stores first in our neighborhood, and then they blow it up in the next town. Pretty soon we have to go further and further to get to a grocery store because they've all been destroyed in the area that we live.
Yeah, where we normally hunt or go shopping with a shopping cart.
Right.
It's not available.
So what happens is if you say, well, now instead of going 7 miles to the grocery store, you have to go 150 miles to go grocery shopping, it's the same type of thing as marine mammals, for example, those that migrate, or salmon, fish that migrate, have to travel the world's oceans and then wind up coming into shore where the Navy is conducting activities that are going to disrupt their passage from, say, out into the ocean into the shore and into the rivers and streams, in the case of salmon, to breed and to start a new generation. So if the Navy refuses during the migration periods to stop, these fish may not make it through the mine warfare training or whatever the Navy happens to be doing along the coast, and they won't be able to get in. The fishermen are going to suffer because they won't have fish to catch. The industry, you know, we have a whale festival on the Mendocino Coast every year going up the coast from Mendocino County all the way up through Humboldt County, and people can go and watch the whales. There's a festival. Thousands of people come here from all over the world to see our whales, whether it's the blue or the gray whale migrating. And what happens is if they no longer can migrate through our area without being in a Navy warfare testing battleground, where not only sonar but other weapons of mass destruction are being used, their lifespan is going to be cut short sooner or later because they can't make it from feeding ground to breeding ground to calving ground, all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes for anything that migrates, even sea turtles, for example.
Right, and sea turtles, when they're babies, you know, just hatchlings, they eat everything, you know, the plants and they live on the shrimp and everything, but as they get older, they go into the plants. And they live for hundreds of years, and, you know, the big ones, and they're getting, one, polluted at the same time, their disorientation. It's amazing where all the testing is being in the concentrated areas of where the birthing or the mating of these animals are, because I've always wondered, and I'm just throwing this out, I don't have the answer and you may not have either, but there was a lot with those, because a mammal is like a human being, it has to carry its young and give birth to the young. It gives the birth naturally to it in the ocean, and also feeds it with breast milk. The thing is, though, with all the species going, it's also where we have made, as mankind, a business of making artificial wombs and tanks to carry embryos or cloned species of animals or anything. It's like, are you trying to destroy one aspect of covering under a you know, how much can you bomb, you know, a living planet, and at the same time not save that species? It's like trying to destroy it so that then they can have control and make a species.
Well, I don't think that they're going to be able to replace all of the things that they're
correct.
Destroying, because there's even things in the ocean that people have never seen before.
Correct, correct. Deep down, even the fluorescent animals and plants for light and the dyes and the aquaculture for even medicinal use or anything, it can go on a whole lifetime. Everyone's searching in space, but it's a whole universe down there at the bottom of the sea.
And we don't understand clearly the impacts of loss of one species on other species. We know that it can be tremendous, but we don't always understand it. And so in the position that we're in at this point is that we're talking about tremendous losses. And it's not, you may injure an animal off the Florida coast, have it migrate and be able to migrate for a time, but then it can die somewhere else because of the scope of the migration. So sometimes they find strandings in South America or other countries on other island areas where these animals, marine mammals and other types of marine life migrate to, because they can't get to where they need to go, or they'll look thin. They'll tell you that they're starving sea lions somewhere. Well, that means that the food supply is not there for them. And the otter population along the California coast is dropping. They don't know why. A lot of marine mammal species are declining now. And with our Navy warfare testing and the Navy and the other military branches refusing to not test in certain areas and protect certain areas, think of this. The United States went and said, we have areas in the United States, national marine sanctuaries, that are so designated. And we designated them years ago because we knew that these were very special areas with certain types of populations that should be preserved. And yet, Barbara Boxer and Senator Feinstein and Congressman Waxman said, oh, yeah, they're going to be conducting military exercises in national marine sanctuaries. Well, then what do we preserve them for? I mean, how can you conduct live fire military exercises using every known weapon system and the new ones coming along, the new technologies,
right,
in an area that we have designated and spent money and time to preserve?
Right, or was that just saving a commodity for something else in the future, like we've seen with forestry or any aspects of that? The thing is, but it is, well, also, too, human beings are supposed to steward the animals, not destroy them and not destroy species. Look what happened years ago when certain fisheries were doing in reference to looking for tuna and, you know, fishing in certain areas with big trawls and that, and ended up catching dolphins and that. There was a whole, you know, save the dolphin from the tuna boats, you know. But at the same time, now we have not a net, but we have a warfare machine, a piece of equipment that is doing massive damage, not just in a certain location, too. It's affecting a global situation. You mentioned earlier, Rosalind, that, you know, with certain species disappearing or, you know, becoming extinct, they're not available again on this planet. But the thing is that many times there's been a lot of papers in reference to the noise that whales make and dolphins, especially the whales, they send out like a signal of sonar that that also can put balance or an energy within the Earth as healing Mother Earth or any of those aspects.
Yes, so and that's correct. And that's how they communicate over these tremendously long distances. That's how they find each other for mating purposes. There's all kinds of things that go on in the ocean. And see, my major objection to the Navy is that they don't have to do all these live fire exercises. They don't have to use all these real bombs. We know Hellfire missiles, for example, cost about $57,000 apiece back in 2009, and we know that they're using and shooting off hundreds and thousands of them in the oceans just because that's what the Navy wants to do. But we've been using Hellfire missiles for, you know, practically in the Vietnam War era, and everybody knows how Hellfire missiles, how they work. I mean, this is no big surprise. So why you have to fire off in almost every range, why you have to fire off Hellfire missiles and Slammer ER missiles and all these missiles in the name of warfare practice as a live fire exercise is absolutely beyond me. What, it's just for a show on the boat, to have a big show that something exploded?
Yeah, because they even film it, you know, early on when they did explosions, you know, first designing those missiles, the Hellfire missile or anything, meaning you see the result, what type of property is being hit and what's going to be the damage or the consequence of even the sound that goes off from a rocket or a missile, you know, that way, you know, on the land, versus what will happen in the sea. And the interesting thing, just as one is airwave sign, but when you're attacking and sending a signal, well, a sound wave, you know, through the ocean, you also have another effect of it is being that the ocean is made up of salt water, so those minerals can also amplify the signal or retard it.
That's correct.
You know, the salt crystal.
That's correct.
And
so,
go ahead.
You see, so we have, but we also have more powerful, we have more powerful weapon systems, but we have more powerful sonar. We have more powerful electromagnetic weapons. We have more powerful lasers. You see, the thing is that the Navy says, oh, well, you know, going back to the 1940s, you know, this, it, you know, nothing was disturbed whenever we did some little practice. Well, there's no comparison to what they were doing in 1940 or 45 and what and the type of technology and weapon systems that they have today. So they compare apples and oranges all the time in their reports to say, well, you know, back in 1945, you know, this that we weren't, you know, nothing was going on. We weren't doing any damage. Well, one, they didn't have anybody to research the damage, but two, the number and scope of all of their weapons of mass destruction were much less. And now look at the stuff that they're dropping into the ocean from their ships. They're dumping, in other words, weapon ordnance disposal, explosive ordnance disposal, all kinds of things. Whenever one of these bombs goes off, then you have all kinds of byproducts from the blast itself. And so you're finding aluminum-coated fiberglass in our oceans, which is chaff, mm-hmm. cadmium, chromium, copper, iron, lead, manganese, mercury. You've got all kinds of aromatic hydrocarbons, benzene, toluene, xylene, fluoranthine, naphthalene, which is a carcinogen, just to name one, hydrogen cyanide, barium chromate, potassium perchlorate, all types of chlorides, titanium, perchlorate that's in rocket fuels, jet fuel emissions, and all of the rest. I read you a very small list of page after page after page of byproducts or actually what is being dumped into the oceans.
Right, and this is accumulating because it's going to make clumps of this stuff, too, as it mixes with the salt and make other compounds with it that are going to be toxic. But at the same time, it's like, and I've had this, not debate, but this type of discussion with other fellow environmentalists or industrial hygienists or safety engineers that it seems like we were of a generation that passed the laws to protect the workplace, the environment, our water, and our making our drinking water pure. But at the same time, as we think that we should be safer and with the better scientific equipment that's out for detection, it's like, oh, don't worry about it. We can dump here when we know better.
That is correct.
And that I personally don't understand. Why do you go through all this training? Why do you go through different institutes, like a governmental industrial hygienist or any of these things in training or anything, if it's just going to be, oh, turn the cheek, go another way, when you have to be accountable in the profession as just as accountable in whatever military service or anything that we're all in evolved because we all are human and we're supposed to be accountable for what our actions are. There is many, many training that has occurred in the Navy where they have the once a year training in the environmental, and they ask the public or even their own staff to come in for environmental health, toxicology. It's a very good week of concentrated environmental training, usually in the springtime in their Norfolk, Virginia facility. But the thing is, what's happening? Why are they getting less active in maintaining and making our environment pure? That I don't understand.
Well, it's a good question, but here's another impact that we really have mm-hmm. to look at. You know, in Africa and in ocean countries, we deplore the taking of animals for food or for different reasons within certain countries, whether it's elephants or whether it's small game, whatever it is. We deplore people that are causing harm in those areas. But when you start destroying the oceans, which our Navy is up to, in my humble opinion at this time, and when you start destroying the food supply or destroying the balance in the oceans that is still left that hasn't already been impaired, what happens is that there will be less food in the food chain for those populations that live near the ocean to fish and eat. And as that food supply goes away, more and more animals are going to be poached, and we're going to lose a great deal of animals. The studies are already there showing that whenever a fishing supply goes away for a native population or a coastal region, then the inland territories are then poached for food.
Yeah. Now, in the poach, okay, killing the wildlife that's in the ocean, and then the poaching, which is on the land, in those areas that have heavy poaching, is there heavy developmental in maybe agricultural or other aspects of an industrial applications,
sure.
meaning bringing in new buildings or whatever? Is that occurring too?
Well, sure. You have the cutting down of the trees. You have the exploitation of the natural resources for oil, gas, whatever is going on in an area. And as the populations have less and less food because of the industrialization of an area, then that puts stressors on the natural environment as well. But it's like an ever-growing circle. You impact one area, and other areas become overburdened.
Yes, and that overburden, you see the impact, because basically it's taking in those areas, it would be interesting to look at, if they were, as we classify it, as third world developmental countries, that in the with the bombing of these ocean areas, is it proportional to the development of that area as a result of poaching, as a result of loss of food?
Well,
let alone the destruction of the animals.
Sure. It's hard to tell if it's proportional, but in the areas where it happens, we do know that the rate of poaching and the rate of looking for food on land versus being able to fish the seas becomes increasing by the populations that live on coastal regions.
Right. I want to bring out a point. There was a beautiful diagram that I think is being used on one of your brochures, because you do the most beautiful awareness brochures and education for the public to get involved and also call their congressman or congresswoman to voice their opinion that they may object to this situation that's occurring for our sea mammals. But in the 1700s, it used to be someone sitting on a crow nest to look to see if there's any animals out there to keep the ships away from it. That, even with the new technologies, that's basically what's happening too with these testings. Have you found that out?
Well, yes, that cartoon it's a cartoon that we, mm-hmm. A woman and I in Oregon designed together, talking about how we were going to do this based on some information. And you can visit my website or
mm-hmm.
Your website, and you can see some of the graphics there because they're online. But what we really want you to know about this graphic, which shows marine mammals, and it's kind of an odd status of affairs. But what happens here is that we have sophisticated technologies worldwide, us and other countries, that can listen and determine where marine mammals are moving, because we can tell by the sound, the distance, and all kinds of things that they're detectable. Even fishing fleets now use this type of technology, and other countries, and they can map the ocean bottoms. They can do all kinds of things with this technology. The Navy, on the other hand, and the National Marine Fisheries Service, a branch of NOAA, have decided that the best possible way for the Navy to see marine mammals of all sizes, of course, and there's many, many different sizes, would be by shipboard visual monitoring from essentially the mast of a ship. And we use a 17th century ship in our cartoon just because the Navy has taken that this mitigation measure, which they admit from their own studies to be effective only 9% of the time in detecting marine mammals, is the method that they're using for mitigating any of their activities. Now, my father was a tugboat captain
mm-hmm.
in the San Francisco Bay Area during World War One and World War Two. And as a tugboat captain, when it's foggy, when the skies are gray, when it's cloudy, when there's white caps, when there's winds, when there's rain, when there's all kinds of adverse weather conditions, you can't see what's on the top of the ocean. You couldn't see a log, much less bubbles, much less a sea turtle, much less anything that is in the ocean, pops up for a short time and drops, because the weather conditions are very adverse. So in order to see something, you might have to have a perfectly sunny day. You might have to have no white caps, no wind, and have someone looking at the right spot at the right time to detect a marine mammal. And then they say, well, we'll send up a plane. We'll fly around for 15 minutes if we don't see anything. Then 20 minutes later, it's okay to drop our bombs or use our sonar, use our lasers, etc. The thing is that your ability to see what's under the surface of the water using visual methods, your ability to see what's going on, in other words, it would have to be huge to be able to be seen from the mast of a ship. And they say, well, we have visual sighting training so that we can put someone up with their binoculars, and that they, if we see a marine mammal, then our objective would be to stop our multi-million-dollar bombing or other exercise and let the marine mammals move out of the way. Well, if that's true, then why do they need a permit to harm marine mammals from the National Marine Fisheries Service?
Mm-hmm.
They have no intention of stopping any type of multi-million-dollar warfare exercises just to save a marine mammal. And most of them, they can't see. Our cartoon shows them to be underwater.
Right, right.
Various things underwater. It shows that they may not be able to see anything from a mast. And here's our Navy. Now think about our Navy, the capability of our Navy over the last 4 years. Our Navy has run aground on two coral reefs. The Heritage Reef that they ran aground on over in Australia, the ship got stuck so bad, they didn't even know where they were. The problem was the Navy didn't even know where they were, and when they were told that they were going toward a coral reef, they kept on going full speed ahead, stuck on the reef. Their ship had to be cut apart at taxpayer expense because the Navy ran it aground on this coral reef and then couldn't get it off. And the only way that they could get it off was to cut it off, and there's still remnants of it still there. The Navy has rammed its own ships in broad daylight. Recently, a Navy ship hit an oil tanker, broadsided it, and did damage to the ship, both of them. Anyway, our Navy seems to be in a position where in recent years, I mean, they shot off a missile in Southern California, and the missile came back and hit their own ship.
I didn't realize that. I'm wondering if these same ships, their captains or their, you know, the crewmates, the sailors on board, if they're testing these areas, if they're having the effects from it and getting disoriented and not knowing what they're doing.
Well, they've fired about 45 commanders, ship commanders, in the last couple of years. 45, well, closer to about 90, I think. But the Navy is in dire straits because its military has been engaged in embezzlement, fraud, drunkenness, all kinds of things, and they've been firing their ship captains and their commanders like hotcakes off a grill at times because of all kinds of various problems, and that's drinking and womanizing. I mean, you name it, and boy, I'll tell you, these guys are in a whole lot of trouble. Stars and Stripes lists a lot of them
mm-hmm.
on their website, but it's just stunning. So we have a Navy that is having, I mean, one of our submarines was so badly damaged during docking on the East Coast that it had to be taken out of commission forever. Other incidents are going on. The Navy seems to be running into its own ships, running aground, not knowing where they are. I mean, they have trouble finding lighthouses sometimes. But the thing is, the state of their technology is so great, but they use all of these this technology. The people that are running things don't know how to use it. And if we run into, for example, one of the things that I've talked about with other people is when one of our ships runs into another one of our Navy ships and damages them both, having to be towed around to get back to dock, how can you have visual monitoring and think that you're going to be effective with visual monitoring when you don't have the capability to even see your own ship in a broad daylight situation and run into it?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when we talk about the technology and we talk about all the sophisticated things, when you start digging down and you look at the drone crashes and the in the ocean from taking off on these the decks of ships, and you look at the different types of things that are happening and the accidents, and you look at the problems that they're having, and then you say to them, well, we're going to test these sophisticated weapon systems and weapons of mass destruction. It's a scary thing because we don't seem to be competent enough to handle not only the technology, but we don't have the trained personnel to do it either.
Right.
And that is of concern when we're talking about testing all these experimental weapon systems.
Mm-hmm. And with any type of officer in any military, they have gone supposedly, I know, a lot of training to be the best of what they are. And with all this foul-up, it's not good at any situation, let alone the profession and also the loss of not only equipment, but like a ship. I mean, I don't know how much a tugboat runs versus a big aircraft, flight.
Quite different.
Yeah, I know. They're millions of quite different. But at the same time, it's still a loss, and it wasn't in the, as I call it, in the budget for replace because it's supposed to have a depreciation value, you know, that way. Now, with the not only just the testing, but also I know that there is a new OEIS document that is being for public comment that is coming up on March 25th of this year, and we're just getting one, too, for public comment for the Navy's application on February 28th, which is only 2 days away. Could you share with the audience about those documents? That they
yes.
might need public comment?
Yes. The U.S. Navy Northwest Training Range, it's the NWTTEIS.com is the website. You can go there and look at the map of the range. You can visit there, and you can make public comment. It tells you how to do it. But the Navy wants to expand its warfare testing ranges and range from Northern California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, all the way to Alaska. It's the expansion is in the types and of warfare testing that they're going to be conducting and the experimental weapon systems they're going to introduce for testing in our range, but also it's going to extend all the way to Alaska. And anyone can make a public comment on that. You don't have to live in our area. But we are trying to get the public comment date extended for this Navy Environmental Impact Statement. It's a draft. And people can read it online or they can request a copy. The public relations officer's name is right on the top. And he can be contacted. And under the Environmental Protection Act, NEPA, National Environmental Protection Act, they can get a copy of it. He will tell them it's expensive, but you just tell him it's okay. You'll call. You can get it. Contact a supervisor through your congressman to get a copy of it, because the Navy says, well, it's too expensive, but they're willing to blow up our oceans with expensive bombs that have to be replaced at taxpayer expense, but they don't want to give you a document that they need to do under the National Environmental Protection Act. So you can get a copy, you can get a CD, or you can read the document online, and you can make public comments. And we hope that everyone will not only make a public comment to the Navy about their activities here, because we're working to curtail their activities, but also your congressman, your U.S. senator. There's a toll-free number. It's 866-22-00044. That's 866-22-00044. You can call your congressman or your U.S. senators and ask them to restrict Navy warfare activities in the Pacific Ocean to protect our national marine sanctuaries, our marine reserves, our biologically sensitive areas, and to protect any migrating fish or marine mammals in an area where they may be conducting testing to not test at that time. The issue here is that this EIS is really important for public comment, because the more public comment they get and the more your elected officials and your newspapers and everyone else knows about this, the more we can have a public backlash to try and get the Navy to curtail a lot of its activities in our region.
Right, to suppress it. Now, the other thing with this, when you log in, like over or at the Navy website, does that automatically go into the congressional, you know, from logging in the objection, or do you have to do both?
You should do both, because the public comment on the Navy draft EIS will go to the Navy. But the public comment you need to make is to your elected officials and to your newspapers, letting them know that you are objecting to having this type of weapons of mass destruction and sonar and other toxic chemicals being used in a range right off the coast. Now, in your area in Southern California, a massive new range was just approved in December 2013, to have a warfare range testing all the way from Southern California to Hawaii. It's a massive range. And so the Navy has decided that they're going to test in this range between Hawaii and Southern California along the Southern California coastline, reaching up midway through the state. And they're going to be harming marine mammals in that range. They're going to be conducting all kinds of warfare activities. And in addition, every marine mammal that goes through from Baja California to moving up the coast our way is going to be hit with all these different types of toxic chemicals and warfare exercises, et cetera. They're going to be hit all along the California coast to Northern California, Oregon, Washington, up to through Alaska, and back down and over to Hawaii. There's no place for them to go to escape the type of activities that the Navy is going to be conducting if we allow this all to progress forward without putting a stop to it.
Right,
now, our senators, Senator Barbara Boxer, is on the Environment Committee. Do you think that she has held a single solitary hearing to protect any of our national marine sanctuaries, to protect any of these vitally important areas that we have to preserve, in other words, anything along our coastline or in Hawaii or any of Alaska? Not one hearing. She won't even talk about it to the newspapers and hasn't held one press conference on this issue that I know of since 2009.
Are you finding not just her, but meaning other governmentally elected officials, you know, congressional or senatorial, having more of no comments or no interaction like what you just expressed with her office's actions?
Senator Boebter and Senator Feinstein have been dead silent on the issue except for issuing a few letters. Now, what has taken place is our former U.S. Congressman Mike Thompson, who is in a different district now because of redistricting in California, has spoken out to the press and to the media on this issue and has found that some of this is not, it has been untenable of what the Navy is doing. Our new congressman, Jared Huffman, has just yesterday requested an extension of time for public comment for the letter that we had mentioned just briefly earlier from the U.S. Navy to the National Marine Fisheries Service to allow them to harm marine mammals between 2015 and 2020. And this document, the public comment time on that is February 28th. This is also on your website. It's the information is on my website, but anyone can contact me about this at 707-485-7520, or they can contact me at my email address, info@californiaskywatch.com. That's all spelled out, info@californiaskywatch.com, or they can visit my website at agriculturedefensecoalition.org.
Hold
and,
that thought.
Punch U.S. Navy. There's six sections on the U.S. Navy on my website.
I hear our music in the background, Rosalind. Just hold for our break, our short break, and we'll come right back so we can continue this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our second hour of our show with Ms. Rosalyn Peterson. And we're discussing the risk of death of 11 million sea animals. And just before we took the break, Rosalyn, I know that you mentioned the phone number to contact you. If you could repeat that, because I don't know if the audience heard it because we were going into the music into the break.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the music when it first starts low, so I didn't know we were having a break.
It's okay.
So I apologize.
No problem.
Yes, my website for Rosalyn Peterson is agriculturedefensecoalition.org. The toll-free number to contact your elected officials, U.S. senators or U.S. congressmen in Washington, D.C. is 866-22-00044. My telephone number is 707-485-7520. That's 707-485-7520. And if you go to my website, I have all my contact information on the website, plus six sections on the United States Navy activities in the Atlantic, in the Pacific, and in the Gulf of Mexico, along with various island areas where the Navy is also conducting a lot of warfare activities as well. The scope of the Navy activities is stunning, and these warfare activities are going to have an effect on all of our coastal regions in one way or another. Because people are going to realize that they're not going to be able to see all of the marine life that has been available to them in the past. And this is not a legacy I want to leave for my grandchildren. I really want to talk about, you know, they're very young, but someday it would be nice to be able to show them a world of the ocean that may still exist. And if we allow the Navy to destroy it, in the name of warfare practice, then I object.
Yeah, I agree. I object, too. At the same time, with the testing that's happening, too, on the East Coast in the Gulf with the manatees, have they been, I'm going to say, dying off faster than the whales? Have you seen any studies that way or worse?
Well, the population of the manatees has been taking severe hits in the last few years, and their population is definitely going downward relatively quickly. It's hard to know because you have to do these research on the numbers and where these marine mammals are, especially whales that move around. So keeping track of the numbers and also keeping track of strandings and other issues is tough because we're doing more and more of activities that tend to make them less likely to be in certain areas that they used to be in and also to track them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the scope of the strandings and the scope of a lot of species declining is getting worse each year.
I know in one of the, I'm going to call it news alerts or anything that I get or you may get from other coworkers or even our program director, Shoshana, sending us different news articles. There was, I can't remember if it was this past summer or maybe the springtime, where there was a lot of deaths of newborn dolphins. Was that ever determined if it was related to the testing?
Depends.
Do you remember
on,
that?
It depends on where, but there was a lot of deaths in the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know the impacts of all the things that are going on in the Gulf of Mexico because
Correct.
There's oil. There's
Correct.
A gas, there's all kinds of chemicals in the Gulf, so that's a really hard issue. But we do know that there were a lot of deaths, and they were trying to figure out the reason. But you can bet that this idea that we can't just use our oceans for unlimited dumping. We can't use them for unlimited types of warfare testing without having tremendous impacts. And you're going to see more and more of them as the impacts exponentially grow, because the military warfare testing programs in all the ocean areas are growing exponentially about every 3 or 4 years.
Right, and a lot of the military bases that were closed, that became brownfields, et cetera, that they're now being redeveloped into communities, new housing projects, et cetera. So that could even have old hazardous materials there, you know, if it was an old base.
Well, look at Treasure Island.
Yeah.
They've got a tremendous, they're finding radiation at Treasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that when the Navy left Treasure Island, they really didn't make the Navy clean it up very well.
Mm-hmm.
But now they put low-income housing on Treasure Island, and it was a real shocker to read just, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. I was in the San Francisco Chronicle. There's several articles been there about Treasure Island. And the people that bought there were told that they couldn't dig in the ground. They couldn't, you know. In other words, there were certain things that they couldn't do because they knew it was hazardous. So they put poor, low-income housing on Treasure Island, knowing fully well that there was a problem there. And how can you buy a house and you can tell your kids in the playground and not to disturb anything, not to dig, and people have been finding radioactive materials.
Right.
So you look at the Navy and its history, whether on Guam or whether on other Vieques islands, wherever they've been, there's a lot of refuse that is highly potentially toxic. And the people on Treasure Island are beginning to have health effects. And, you know, it's hard to move because you're in low-income housing to find other low-income housing to live in. But the people there are getting very ill. And the
mm-hmm.
Navy knew fully well that Treasure Island might not ever be safe for residential living, especially with children in schools, et cetera.
Right, and it should be responsible, too, for any county that it would have jurisdiction over there to make it that it's healthy and safe for an individual, because there is a duty responsibility for the public health.
There is, but whenever you have an area that's been a toxic waste dump, whenever you have areas that have been the sites of toxic manufacturing, whenever you have these different sites, whether it's industrial or military, and military bases have had toxic water supplies going to the troops stationed in certain areas in the South for years. And then all of a sudden all these health effects show up, and then people finally, it dawns on them that the Navy or the different branches of the military knew about the toxics in their water systems for years and never told anyone.
Right, right. Many people exposed to all different chemicals as related to their time in the service or their dependents that lived on the bases or extensions of. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Rosalind?
Well, the other thing that concerns me is that our involvement in Syria was to take their chemical weapons. Now, I want you to think about this, because we said, well, we'll take the chemical weapons, and then there was going to be some international taking of them for disposal, and then all of a sudden the U.S. winds up taking these chemical weapons from Syria. So what are they going to do with them? They're going to incinerate them in the ocean, or they're going to dump them in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't say where in the heck they were going to dump them or where they were going to burn them. So if they burn them, the air pollution is going to have a cause and effect. Or we're going to take these chemical weapons and what? We're going to dump them in the ocean somewhere to hide them? See, this is the problem when you have something called in our range here for Northern California, Oregon, Washington, there's a range that goes into Idaho, and there's the Boardman Navy range for drones in Oregon. But when you say, well, we're going to have ordnance dumping, we're going to have different types of dumping in the ocean, And then they refuse in their draft EIS to tell you what type of dumping they're going to be doing, just that they're going to be doing it. Well, just what toxic chemicals, what hazardous waste, what are they dumping in the ocean? Because they have talked about dumping different types of stuff off the ships as they cruise around, but they won't tell you where they're dumping all of this stuff that's refuse that they no longer want. And so they're not going to properly dispose of things. They're going to be dumping in our oceans. And this concerns me because this is another health-type impact that we're talking about that's going to have a cumulative effect along with everything else.
Right, and we've seen just using radiation as an example, after disasters that have occurred in the world, the effects on the marine life of what we're seeing, even with starfish that are not developing arms, you know, their legs, and at the same time not being able to replicate, you know, with just using radiation as a guideline for the effects, let alone a multifaceted hazardous material, and even some exotic new stuff. We don't know what they're dumping and how
we have no idea, nor do we even understand the synergistic effects of different chemicals in some areas mixing with seawater, which is going to have a tremendous impact as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like you're going to, you know, when they talk mm-hmm. about the starfish decline in certain areas along the Northern California coastline and Oregon and up in various areas, when they talk about that decline, they have no idea what's causing it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem. Then you're going to mix in continued Navy warfare testing in those areas. You're going to mix in toxic disposal. You're going to mix in sonar use, laser use, and all these things which could impact the starfish. And so you're going to have a pea soup mix of things that's going to contribute to the overall problem, which could mean that certain species survive that might not be the best for our oceans and could destroy. In other words, their environmental impact could be worse because the starfish are gone.
Right, right. There is, a consequence of the loss of a species within that whole, not just food chain, but the balance within the ecosystem.
Sure.
Now, with not only, there's on our intercoastal, meaning the coastal waterways on the West Coast, under this new plan for testing and everything, are they going to be doing testing on the East Coast too?
Oh, yes. We're talking about all the way down the entire eastern seaboard, unrelenting. The range map is tremendous for the East Coast, which takes you from above the Canadian border, so Canada's involved with us, all the way down through Florida and into the Gulf of Mexico. And it's out in international waters. The U.S. does not – see, the U.S. used to have the small ranges stay, within a certain range of our coastline. Now the Navy has taken the position that they can test almost anywhere they want. And in taking this position – they are escalating a Cold War with China, with Russia, and other countries. Japan is beginning to militarize again. Korea is in militarizing in a certain extent. And what's happening is with these various countries militarizing, they're going to be using the oceans for that type of testing in order to keep up with us so that we're not dominant in certain areas. So, you see, you escalate, as we escalate our warfare testing, as we escalate what we're doing, other countries will escalate as well. And this doesn't bode well for our oceans at all.
No, because the victims, not even the victims, the ones that will be losing are going to be the sea life, the sea mammals, and, sea life, period, in these oceans. Because the... we know, too, that like the kelps or any of the plants that would be in the sea, they're going to absorb, we're just looking at an oil spill or anything, they're going to absorb those toxins, and they are the food for many of the adult animals that are sea animals.
That's
like
correct.
Or they even
protect certain types of animals in the ocean, like sea otters are protected because of the kelp beds. So there's this. You see, we're in a position where we have taken are taking activities that are destroying the world we live in. In other words, we can say whatever we want. Oh, we have to have our Navy be number one and all of this, but they could do it without having live fire practice. They could do it without practicing in every single square inch of every ocean coastal area that we have in the United States and in our island areas as well. But here's the thing. Why are we destroying ourselves in the name of warfare practice? I mean, what is this about? You know, we have simulator machines for flying aircraft. We have all kinds of things that for training, we don't have to actually have the live fire all the time everywhere and the sonar and all of this. And so, we're going to be in a perpetual state of worldwide war for the rest of the century or something? How can we afford this? The economy can't keep up with this. The tax dollars that we spend going to war, we're borrowing money to pay for our wars, and the cost of being in so many different countries now and bombing in so many different countries with drones, etc. And so here we are. We're in this massive, you know, when the president said, well, Chuck Hagel, Secretary Hagel said, well, we're going to be reducing our military spending. We're not reducing our military spending. The Navy certainly isn't. Just look at what they're spending every time they blow up 100 Hellfire missiles just in our range in the Northern California, Oregon, Washington area. Every time they blow up thousands of pounds of bombs. All of that is military spending, and it's escalating. It's not decreasing. And so to say that we're going to cut back in a few areas, well, they were going to cut back in a few areas, but then they said, well, the National Guard will pick up the difference. So they were going to use more of National Guard troops to pick up the difference from some of their cutbacks. So I see that it's like we're going to shift things around. It's like moving peas on a puzzle or something. Mm-hmm. We're just going to shift the pea groupings around, but I don't think that they're going to be changing or reducing any type of military spending.
Right. And now, too, with the use of all these weapons, which are, I'm going to call them older than the new ones that they're developing, you know, even the nanotization of weaponry, the thing is, maybe in a bigger picture, it's to get rid of all the ordnance so that then they can replace it with new stuff. New stuff meaning higher tech stuff.
Well, they definitely want to replace it with higher-tech stuff. Look at the F-35 cost overruns and all the problems with this F-35 jet. In other words, they've got some types of shipping that they know is inherently going to fail very quickly, and yet they're still producing it. But when you say, well, see, I think that what happens is that all this type of ordnance blowing up in the ocean really feeds a certain set of groups of industry, the war industry, in the United States because it keeps feeding into them to build more weapons. I don't see them reducing their stockpile of all these bombs and weapons. They're having to increase them because they're doing all this warfare testing with them and so-called training. This is ridiculous.
Right, for is what we're going into these, I'm going to say, state of the art time. It's like, as you have stated through this show, how much bombing do you have to do, and how much do other nations have to do? Because the end result, not only are you not going to have the food to feed your own people, but at the same time, you're destroying the whole ecosystem that's affecting everything that we're living on.
That's correct. In other words, when you destroy the oceans, you're destroying a part of the ecosystems that we depend upon for food, that many, many people depend upon for a wide variety of subsistence. And what, we're going to force them to eat GMO crops? Is this what,
is this the replacement? Or I love the clone. In other words, you pour some liquid into a mold and you make a T-bone steak, you know. And what nutrient value is that going to have that's going to alter your nutrient value that has made you you from all the thousands of years of your ancestors that are trying to perfect it, you know?
Well, sure, but, you know, this factory food idea that all we're going to do is mix some chemicals together and we're going to have all this nutritious food, they're out of their minds.
Yeah, well, look what happened, not trying to take away from the sea mammals, but just look what happened a couple weeks ago that there was on some alerts and some awareness that they had a name brand cereal that was the Breakfast of Champions, okay? And turn around, you could put a magnet over it, and it would stick to the magnet. So there was metal in it. There had to be ferrous iron in it. Now, was that metal filings that were in there, or was that a nano-edible chip? Who knows? But at the same time, that hasn't occurred in almost 50 years with that particular cereal. Or more.
Sure.
You know, so the thing is, it's changing our life. I mean, we've had food, not only GMO predispose you, it used to be that the GMO, well, let me put it this way, the plasmids that are used in it and to making the GMO, your body is supposed to be able to protect yourself so that you don't absorb that foreign DNA of that whatever they're designing and wouldn't make a teratoma, you know, a tumor from an embryonic stem cell or any of this thing. But that's not occurring now. Something they're putting into these GMOs or that, it's being absorbed into the humans. It's being absorbed into the animals that they're eating, you know, GMO corn in their animal feed.
Sure. And you're not going to be able to escape because, you know, they said, well, they're developing this new, I don't know, hamburger or something. And they're developing some new food. And they said, well, we're going to use soybeans in it, but it's going to be natural. And I thought, well, for example, soybeans, most of them are genetically modified. So what do you mean this product that you're producing is going to be all natural and good for you? They're mm-hmm. going to put a genetically modified product in to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at this and you go, you know, this it's like Pringles. How many years ago was Pringles is not potato chips? It's not made out of potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you buy Pringles in a can, perfectly formed, and all this kind of good stuff, and you say, oh, well, eat Pringles. Well, they already know that there's some health effects and knew back then when they first came out that there would be health effects from eating Pringles. And they said, well, you can go ahead and eat them because, you know, the health effects wouldn't be that much. But you just didn't know that people divorced themselves from the fact eating, they thought they were eating potato chips. And people buy Pringles today without knowing that they have nothing to do with potato chips.
Right. It's flour flavoring and frying it versus not thinking that it was, you know, like making potato pancakes and grating it and then forming it into perfect Pringles. Absolutely no potato in it.
Yeah. So I look at this factory food and I look at the idea that we're destroying a food source for all of us along the way as the Navy perpetuates itself and various industries try to overfish. There's all kinds of problems. It's not just one. But the massive impact on the scope of the marine mammals and on the scope of what we're looking at is beyond belief.
Right, and so the majority of these marine animals, one is they have to be older to be mature enough to breed, but at the same time, like an elephant or even a horse carries a foal a long time. An elephant, I think it's 2 years that they carry that, you know, baby elephant.
Yes.
I mean, the mother's exposed to a lot of stuff. And especially if you're swimming in the ocean as a mom, as a well, and having the effects of hearing the sonar and beaching or anything like that. It's just, when is, well, it's going to happen. You have to make a stance, which you are, and colleagues of yours, and the awareness to the public, but at the same time, it's where mankind needs to realize that this stewardship of the animals and also of this land called Earth is not being done properly, and it needs to be accountable for it. Someone has to be accountable.
I think so, and I think it's time that you know, we all join together and say no to this.
Yes.
And to really make an effort. And I'm going to, I have something I'm going to read to you briefly.
Sure.
It's dated December 13, 2013, and it's a letter of authorization to the U.S. Navy, and it allows the taking of marine mammals in the U.S. Navy's Hawaii Southern California Training and Testing Range. Okay? The authorization, this permit, is valid from December 26, 2013 through December 25th, 2018, and it's valid for the taking of various species of marine mammals under the Navy warfare testing programs. And it talks about the number of training activities and the number of hours of sound impulse sources, non-impulsive and impulsive. And it talks about the various ones, and so they talk about, well, if it's an MF1, you would have 11,588 hours per year. If it's an MF1K, that's 88 hours. If it's an MF2, that's 3,060. If it's an MF3, that's 2,336 hours. And if it's an MF5, that's an average of 13,718 items per year. And the list, it's a tremendous list that goes on. In other words, if they're testing the ASW3, that's 16,560 hours per year. Now, they talk about detonations per year by the pound of the bomb and whether it's new or old. And so per year in the Southern California-Hawaii range, they have a 1,740-pound bomb. They're going to have 9 detonations a year. Their 1,000-pound bomb is 224 detonations per year. And in other words, they've got 10-pound bombs, 8,154 detonations, and the list goes on and on and on. There's a lot of pages and lists for this. So then it goes into how many, the impact of training activities, level B harassment on marine mammals, blue whale. They're going to impact about 21,559 per year. The fin whale, 8,531. They talk about the gray whale, 47,750 per year. The gray whale, they're going to be harming about 50 per year. And then they go up to the humpback whale, 46,000. That they're going to impact. The minke whale, 4,030. The sei whale, 2,996. Baird's beak whale, 22,100. Blainsville beak whale, 48,172. Bottlenose dolphins in California, 1,700. The bottlenose dolphin, a different breed, 133,090. Bottlenose dolphin, a different one, in Hawaii, 19,709. And so it talks about in Oahu, 3,000 bottlenose dolphins. In Kauai per year, 901. And the Hawaiian Islands, and they go on. Culver's beaked whale, 314,000 of them are going to be impacted. the dwarf sperm whale, 101,291. Dahl's porpoise, 184,455. And the list here, page three, it goes on to page four. They list the different ones, different types of whales. The longman's beak whale, 17,296. Russo's dolphin, 437,000 of them. I'm just reading through the list on this. In other words, harassment. Now, that's one type of harassment. Then they list another type of harassment, and then they talk about how many that they're going to impact of, in other words, different types of dolphins from a different type of impact. And so the list is now at page 5. It goes to page 6. And guess what?
What?
Okay, mitigation. The holder of this authorization from the National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA, in other words, has to follow mitigation measures when conducting military testing activities. Lookouts. The following are protective measures concerning the use of lookouts. Lookouts positioned on ships will be dedicated solely to the diligent observation of the air and surface of the water. Their observations objectives will include, but are not limited to, detecting the presence of biological resources, recreational or fishing boats, observing mitigation zones, and monitoring for vessel and personal safety concerns. They're talking about lookouts. In other words, they're not going to be using more sophisticated technology to protect marine mammals. They're going to be using... in other words, lookouts.
Like a person sitting on a boat?
Yeah, on the mast of a ship, you know, on top of one of the military boats. And they're going to be using lookouts to determine if there's marine mammals in an area where they're going to conduct warfare testing.
That's high tech, isn't it?
Oh, big time high tech. They've got other things that they could look at. They have some aircraft that might fly over, but then there's a whole period of time that goes by, and if they don't see anything during that time period, well, then they're going to go ahead. But you have to understand that this is like using a butcher knife to do surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right. The whole thing, Rosalind, it just doesn't make common sense. It's like, what are you trying to do? It's even when you're reading all that list of all those sea mammals, and I kept thinking, when they die, where they beach or they harvest, I know they get hauled away, but is someone taking those and extracting oils and doing all different kinds of things to it to make some kind of commodity out of it or clone it? Clone the whole species, but a certain portion. You know, like what I'm saying, it's like we have in the GMO, we went from GMO being the first one being the tomato, and then they put the DNA of the carrot in it so that it'd make it last longer and also taste better. But at the same time, now from that progression, from that first tomato that was GMO, to what is now available, we have vaccines. We have lettuce that is for polio vaccine. You don't know when you ate enough of the lettuce, and where is this lettuce being sold, you know, in third world countries or over here. And the other, the new one that's happening is the plasmid of the scorpion venom, which is the most toxic protein portion of it that is being used in cabbage. If you survive a scorpion bite, you usually end up with high blood pressure. So if you're eating this genetically modified cabbage, are you going to increase the risk of having that protein, that foreign protein in your body, and give you high blood pressure?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing is, and what I'm trying to share with you and the audience, is that we have very creative engineers, scientists, whoever they may be, even myself, very creative in creating something. Now, is that something going to be of benefit or harm? It's like when I've had guests on the show, They're high into making things smaller and looking at stem cell or any of this thing. But that whole industry didn't look at why did they use the most toxic carcinogens in making the coatings for these materials or putting the bioscaffolding in like a stem cell or anything for delivery, meaning that whole industry didn't even realize that they were working with hazardous materials.
Right.
You know, when you talk to them. And what I'm saying is I see what's happening here with the animals, not only the destruction, they're having the unique whatever the animal may be that offers not only the benefit, like you mentioned, the sea otter. The sea otter lives and keeps the balance within the kelp, but at the same time, it loves to eat sea urchins. And if there's no sea otters, there's an overgrowth of sea urchins, and then the kelp dies.
That's absolutely correct.
You know, in the
and
ecosystem.
they know that this would be a problem.
Right.
And so, you know, we have all of these issues which are synergistic and cumulative in effect, and we sometimes don't understand that the course of our actions will have broad implications that may be profound.
And it's like that quintessence, that one piece of sand that just irritates you, that one quintessence that will rock this whole world to realize, hey, wake up, it's time, you can't do this, slap your hands and get on with it, because this is not going to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that many people are waking up and seeing the importance not only of what their experience is and what's in their life, but how their life or their little, I'm going to say, ecosystem within their own little neighborhood is affecting the world. I mean, it is a strong connection to yourself and to the cosmos, but at the same time, we're one little jewel planet here, and whatever we do here is affecting the rest of our galaxy, let alone the other galaxies.
Yes,
so
I think it
balance.
Is. And I agree with you that it is, but here's the rub. We're saying to our children that their education is very bad now. We're saying to them that if they don't understand science, English, math, and computers, well, I don't even know about English anymore, but science, math, and computers, that they're going to be left behind and that the schools should just have this regimented curriculum in those subjects, ignoring everything else. My problem is that kids are losing a connection with the earth. They don't understand that the earth, from the lowest honeybee to some bugs that they, you know, like ladybirds that are even, you know, very small, that how they interact to provide a food supply, the very food they eat from the grocery stores. I mean, I was amazed several years ago when I had a film crew come here to film a project, and they were here about 3 days. And one of the places I took them to visit, because we had time to spend, was I took them to a working ranch. And on the working ranch, there were vegetable gardens. And I wanted them to see the bees working. I wanted them to see how many bees it takes to pollinate one zucchini, for example. And so they were astounded, because one of them said to me, but... And these are men in their late 20s, 30s, and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
and they were city
fat.
Slickers,
yeah.
But they didn't know how small the honeybee was. They couldn't believe that honeybees were so small. And we had a huge pig, and there were little piglets running around, about, I don't know, 17 or 18 of them, and they couldn't believe that those little piglets would get as big as the mom, who was about waist high to them.
Yeah, because some of those pigs get as long as 6 feet and, 4 feet at the shoulders.
Sure. And so the idea that hummingbirds and bumblebees and, in other words, the idea that these small things were providing about two-thirds of the food, you know, agriculture, you know, vegetables and fruits that we eat. and the nuts and the spices and the coffee and all these other things. And they had completely lost touch with the reality of where things came from in the scheme of life that they ate.
Right. There's no, like, touchstone of where it came from. You know, it came from a grocery store.
Yeah. And so what they expect is they can order something on a computer and they can do this or that, and some, you know, food appears. But when you start to look at the destruction of what we're doing to nature's cycle at all levels, you know, whether it's honeybee decline or anything else, if we destroy everything we depend on for food, for our food supply, without taking action to say no, whether it's in the oceans, whether wherever it is, we're going to wind up with food shortages and expensive food that's too expensive to buy, if you can get it. And we're going to wind up in a world that we're not going to recognize. And it's getting
right.
That way more and more now.
Yeah, it's a whole different world than any of us. And at the same time, it's like what is happening, we don't even think to create it in our world versus someone out there is thinking to create it. Do you understand what I mean?
Not quite.
In other words, if you're, you know, sometimes you may see the world one way and looking at it only as a good perspective and putting out good seeds, et cetera, that if you saw something that was evil, you just felt it. You couldn't even conceive how to create something like that.
Oh, that's right. Because
so what
the natural world is incredible.
The world, as I see it, from what I'm experiencing either at work or listening to patients and clients and people on, you know, who interact from the radio show or anything, that it's totally different. It's like there's a balance that's off that needs to come into balance, and it's the awakening of that human being to know that they're human and they're responsible. At the same time, the integration of all this other pollution plus, as I call it anymore.
Yes. And not only that, though, is that we can't be engaged in destroying the earth, that the earth that's here that's been providing for all of us for so long. And the bounty in destroying the earth, whether we're using military weapons of mass destruction, whether we're blowing it up on land areas, whatever we happen to be doing, in other words, what we're doing to the earth is we're destroying our own food supply. We're destroying our own ability to feed ourselves. We're destroying our own ability to survive in the long term. And I think that we're saying to our children, well, if you understand science and math and in other words, in some technology, you're going to be fine. The world's going to be your oyster. But that isn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't go back to saying, look, you're going to have to look at some things and be realistic here, we can't destroy the very earth we live on because there won't be a place for us in the future.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. There won't be anything of this beautiful jewel that has listened to Achilles, had all of our ancients sail at seven seas, you know, in the ocean, and thinking a manatee was a mermaid too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, and they're the neatest things if you've ever seen them in off the coast in the Tampa area where they have the marine, the manatee refuge center there that I always used to think they were the neatest things eating a head of cabbage. Now I wonder if that head of cabbage has the scorpion venom in it, you know? So it's like, what's that going to do? Scorpions don't go after manatees. What's that going to do to the manatee?
Sure. And so our experiments are getting loose, and I think we're seeing the consequences of our experiences. But I'm going to encourage, you know, everyone to pick a topic, whatever topic it is that you feel passionate about, and work toward a goal to making things better, whether it's protecting marine mammals, whether it's protecting honeybees from toxic chemicals, whatever the subject that you want, stopping GMOs. In other words, Mendocino County, a group here, stopped the importation of GMOs into this county, Mendocino County. It's the only county that took it to the ballot and beat the moneyed parties of Monsanto and the rest, and banned GMOs in our county, and it's enforceable by law. So, you know, we have to all take action somewhere. We have to find a place in our life to protect some things because it's in our best interest. It may be not easy to do, but it is in our best interest to do it. And I'm hoping between now and March 25th that people will contact your elected officials and ask them to hold congressional hearings, U.S. congressional hearings, especially in the Senate, to protect our oceans from unlimited warfare testing of weapons of mass destruction, to protect our national marine sanctuaries. I hope that you will make go to our websites and make the public comments for everyone to participate. The more we participate in any type of a group endeavor, the more we participate individually and in groups, the more likely we are to raise awareness and the more likely we are to gain some ends to protect some of the Earth system that we depend upon, sometimes for food itself, like in the case of honeybees, or in other words, food for others in our oceans. If we like things that we eat, you know, we're told fish is good for us, but there may not be fish if we have radiation hazards and we have the Navy not allowing blowing up part of the ecosystems of the ocean. We may not have a food supply there. So we have to look at all of these things. And when you can make a difference, when you can take an hour out of your day or a half hour and make a public comment or call an elected official on a toll-free number like our elected officials at 866-22-00044, I think you're all going to find that you're going to feel better about, in other words, the Earth and yourself, but also you're leaving a place for future generations to come and visit and see in person what the real ocean, the real life that's around us and the beauty of it. Otherwise, we're going to see things and everyone's going to say, well, this used to be here years ago, but now there's no elephants, there's no blue whales, there's no this or that. You're only going to see it in videos and in photographs. And I'm going to tell you, it's totally different seeing it in person. It's totally different, the experience that you find in the real world and the beauty of the real world. So I kind of encourage everyone to say no to some things and to take time out of your day. It doesn't have to be all day, every day, but to take time out just to make an impact in one small way, because you're helping other people and you're also preserving the most precious life on Earth for whatever topic you decide you want to reach out and do something about. And I hope that everyone will take the time to do this and to support others who are working on these causes as well, because it's not only your food supply, it's everyone's food supply. And if we work together, we can accomplish a great deal.
Right. You unify the army. And the other thing, too, is like this show, in particular with you on it being our guest today and discussing the marine mammals shortage and what's going on, as with your own website, please, audience, realize that these are reference areas so that you can, when you make that call to your congressman, and if you get the assistant there and they don't know what you're talking about, you can reference these shows so that then that assistant can better explain what you need to discuss with the congressman or woman if they need to. That way, because I know your site has a wealth of information on this subject, It's
well,
phenomenal.
I have the U.S. Navy maps on the website agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and you can look at the ranges, the U.S. Navy maps of the ranges. You can look at a lot of different information that is available to the public, and you can read some of the things that we were talking about today, because the warfare exercises are in the Navy Environmental Impact Statement, the draft one, especially for our range here in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. Or you can read about the Southern California range and the marine mammals that the Navy is allowed to harm or take in the Southern California-Hawaii range. Or you can read about the Atlantic Seaboard ranges and what impacts are going to be there with the right whales and the manatees and other areas where there's going to be tremendous impacts in the upcoming years as new weapon systems are tested and that we have more powerful technology that will be used against everything and anything in our oceans. So I encourage people to, and I encourage everyone, we can make a difference if we take one step a day or one step every few days or one step a week. We can help others. And if you want to have your children or your grandchildren be able to see some of the wonders of the world, then mm-hmm. we need to definitely step up. Or if we want to save our honeybees and you enjoy vanilla or coffee or spices or all the things that they pollinate, the more we can do to protect them, the better.
Correct. Correct. And with this, just looking back on the times that you've been on this show, Rosalind, as a guest, we went from weather modification to hedge funds that were betting on the weather to the marine sea mammals and the Navy testing to even the new chemicals that were being used in diapers that would cause future generations of sterility, you know, with children using those diapers. We even were on with medication that causes you, I got a blank right now, the medication that causes your ankles to rupture from their ankle, the Achilles tendon. Fluoroquins. They're now being used in nano delivery systems where they were being looked at another. What I'm saying is the topics that you have come and researched and also been active in making the awareness to the public has been greatly appreciated by myself. At the same time, just look at that, just me mentioning those topics that were on the shows, it's a wealth of information just there. When you go back and look at the archives.
Oh, I agree with you. But these are all crucial information for all of us to really take a look at and understand. One of the things that I found out, just as a quick note here, is that there's something called Steri-Strips. And instead of having a surgery, and then after you have your surgery, you're stitched up with regular stitches, they're using the Steri-Strips to keep the areas of the wound bound together. But the problem with the Steri-Strips are that a lot of them are made in China and other foreign countries. They're not sterile. That's a U.S. FDA problem that they see a lot. And that people are having allergic reactions to them. And it's causing slower healing because the skin and the allergic reactions reject these Steri-Strips that are used in hospitals and doctors' offices, and it's causing huge problems for people that have surgery.
We're going to have to do a show on Steri-Strips and other new things of technology and how it's really harming the health. But I heard the music in the background. Rosalind, I want to thank you for being on the show and being with us, and I appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate and thank you for having me as a guest on your show.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. God bless.